Welcome to the Weight Loss for Women podcast, where we teach you how to break free from restrictive diets, restore your metabolism, and build a body you love so you can look and feel your best as you age. All right, let's dive into this episode.
I'm Kitty Bloomfield, co-founder of New Strength and Saturate, creator of pro-metabolic food supplements and seriously saturated skincare. And today I have Matthew Evans on the podcast. He's a farmer and a food writer, and he's just, it's like 6 p.m. there. So he's sitting back having a nice glass of wine, which looks amazing. I'm having a cup of tea, and I thought he'd just be such a great guest to get on the podcast because he has a book and he's very pro dairy. And I actually found you through another podcast. I was like, oh, this guy's great. I should totally get him on the podcast. So anyway, I'll let you introduce yourself and tell everyone a little bit more about, you know, who you are and what you do.
And thanks, Kitty. I'm actually a chef by trade. So I'm interested in milk and dairy because as a cook, as a chef, no one's ever said, what a delicious margarine croissant, no one's ever thought, how much margarine can we put in mashed potato, ice cream, the clue's in the name. And so I come from it, I guess, from that point of view. So dairy was sort of a given, and it's added a lot to us, our lives gastronomically. And then I became a farmer about 16 years ago, and I got interested in where food comes from. So I started that questioning, as a lot of your listeners do, where food comes from, and how is it produced, and what does it do for us? And I actually started milking a cow. And so as a chef, I watched this, dairy milk is a miracle ingredient because it can become solid like cheese, and it can become clotted cream, it can become, yogurt, it can become all these different things. And then it's as a farmer, I'm watching sunlight and soil and air and water become grass, and then grass, which is like, I haven't eaten it since I was a kid, but it wasn't that nice then, and it's not digestible by humans. Watching grass get transformed through a dairy animal, like my dairy cows, into milk became this like secondary miracle. It's like this miracle of sunlight and air and water, and soil becomes grass, which becomes milk, which is one of the most complex substances known to humanity. And then we can transform that milk in the kitchen. So for me, my questions around milk were sort of based on, what is it? Why do we drink it? Why does it play such a big role in our lives? And so I thought, well, is there enough for me to look into this in a way? Because I've done books on, the ethics of eating meat and soil and a few other bits and pieces. And so I'm just a curious person. I thought, well, what is this stuff? This thing that's everywhere, that I used to just think of milk as something to wet my cornflakes, to be honest, and not much else. And never really thought about it in any great respect. And now, as you mentioned, I'm pro dairy, I guess, in lots of ways. I don't think people have to have it, but I went into this book going, well, I have dairy, I think it's probably fine for me, but what is it actually doing for us as humanity? Is what's it done historically, culturally, gastronomically, environmentally, and what's it doing biologically, nutritionally, and what are the substitutes going to do for us?
Which is so good, like as I was mentioning to you before, I didn't drink any dairy for about 17 years of my life. My mum, I don't know what happened. I can't remember. I was like 12, 11 or 12. And she took me to a naturopath, and the naturopath diagnosed me with lactose intolerance. And then so I ate drank soy milk and almond milk and soy cheese, which tasted fucking terrible. And till I was about 34, when I met my business partner, Emma Skarakis, who's the nutrition coach. And, she worked with me to just improve my digestion and improve my metabolism. And then, I could tolerate dairy again, which was bloody amazing because I love, milk. I eat ice cream every single night after dinner. I just am obsessed with ice cream and gelato. I love cheese, have Parmesan cheese in my eggs. I love Gouda. It's just brings so much joy to my life. And, so many of our clients, I think they're scared by the, bloody fitness industry, all these fitness models who, you see them post all their reels on Instagram making their smoothies out of their oat milk and their almond milk. And, I think so many women end up with dairy intolerance issues. It's not the dairy, it's their body, and they're a stress digestive system, low metabolic function, you know, from years of dieting, stress. And when they actually come into our program and heal those things, they find that they can tolerate dairy again. I mean, some of them, they might be better with goat's milk or, you know, Parmesan cheese, and they sort of build up slowly that way. But, you know, I agree with you, nutritionally, it's just so important. You know, it's got calcium, and it's just so difficult to get that amount of calcium you need from other foods that's in a bioavailable form. So, you know, I think there's just a lot of misinformation out there about dairy. So, yeah, anyway, I don't know where you want to start, where you...
Yeah. Look, and I think what you were talking about is fairly common. You know, people are either misdiagnosed. You know, you can be tested for lactose intolerance. And let's face it, two-thirds of the world's population are lactose intolerant. So they can't have a lot of fresh milk every day without having some kind of repercussions. We kind of know that. But a lot of people get, but that doesn't mean you can't have, you know, no milk. So you can actually have, you know, up to a cup of fresh milk a day. But there's ways that humanity's worked out how to, you know, get rid of the lactose before you have the dairy. So yogurt only has half the lactose. So in theory, a lactose intolerant person could have 500 grams of yogurt a day. Hard cheese like Parmesan or cheddar has no lactose left in it. So what's interesting about that is that you can consume some dairy whether you're lactose intolerant or not. And a lot of people who are lactose intolerant have been, you know, diagnosed by Facebook. And I think that's the scary thing, because two-thirds of the world's population isn't lactose tolerant. So they can't have litres and litres of fresh milk without having some kind of gut issue. That's, you know, pretty well documented. But three-quarters of the world gets a substantial part of their nutrition from dairy. So what that means is we've worked out ways that we can put dairy in our lives to give us a balanced diet. Now, you don't have to have dairy. There are some people who are allergic to lactose, very, very few, but if you're very allergic, that's a terrible thing. You just can't have, you know, any of the
I think that's very small, though. Like, I really think very true lactose intolerance is small. I think more of the people are lactose intolerant due to stress digestive system. Like,
there are other things that can digest the lactose within us. There are bacteria that consume the lactose, even if you don't have the exact enzymes within you. So you can sort of, I guess, train your system to be better at digesting lactose. But the whole thing is that dairy has all this other stuff in it besides lactose. Is just one of the main milk sugar. There's all this other stuff in dairy which is really kind of useful, is really useful for humanity. And so we know that. We know it nourishes humanity. But then a lot of people are getting, I guess, afraid of it or think it can be replaced readily. So just going back to your calcium comment, which is a really interesting one. So there's calcium in a lot of the plant milks, you know, where they usually add it back in. It's not usually naturally there in any great amount. And they add it back in, but it's not, as you were saying, not necessarily in a bioavailable form. There's some really good research that came out a couple of years ago, which says, you know, for a glass of milk, you have to have, I think it's like 6 glasses of rice milk, 7 glasses of oat milk to get the same amount of calcium. You have to have something like 22 glasses of soy milk to get the same calcium, bioavailable calcium, so that's available to your body, as you get in a single glass of milk. So, you know, like, I feel sick thinking about 22 glasses of soy milk, to be honest. You know, so when we compare dairy with other things, you know, we have to be very careful about comparing like with like. So a lot of the plant milks are pale, and they make your tea whiter or your coffee creamier looking, you know, but that's about as close as most of them get in terms of nutrition. And so if you get rid of dairy out of your diet, you have to be really careful about how you replace it. And I think that's where a lot of people are making the mistakes. And what we do know is that we've had 10,000 years of humanity consuming dairy from other animals, not just human breast milk, which we were all, you know, historically raised on. But we've had 10,000 years of milking cows and sheep and goats, you know, and other animals, and consuming that. And it's been a real boon for humanity. So But we also know that, you know, Aboriginal Australia survived for 60,000 years without, you know, a continuous living culture for 60,000 plus years without dairy. So we know both things can be true. What I think is scary is taking a normal Western diet and saying, well, let's just get rid of dairy and replace it with something white or something that, you know, that that we think is going to provide the nutrition. And I think the UK is the really good example. The UK are ahead of us on all the sort of plant-based diets and particularly plant milks. And they found, research came out earlier this year, that hospitalisation, so people put in hospital for vitamin deficiency in the UK, nearly tripled in 10 years. That's crazy numbers. So what's happened, the researchers say it's a lot of things to blame, but plant milks are one of the major culprits because people are taking dairy out of their lives and not replacing it with equivalent nutrition. And most of those people who are hospitalized for vitamin deficiency are women of childbearing age because they have different demands. Their body needs different things. And so when they have these heightened demands, they're not getting the nutrition from the stuff that they're putting in their diet. So to get rid of dairy, fine, but it's at your peril to some extent.
Mm. Can you talk a bit more about, you know, like obviously there's calcium, which is amazing. It's, you know, such a well-balanced food, protein, carbs, and fat. Can you talk about some of the other nutrients that you find in dairy that are beneficial?
Oh, yeah, look, there's so many. You know, and I guess we do tend to talk about milk in that in terms of, or dairy in terms of macronutrients, so fat, proteins, and sugars. So it has all of those, which are, you know, they're things we need in our diet. And milk provides complete protein. So, you know, if you're getting all the amino acids that you need that your body can't make itself. But it also provides a whole bunch of other stuff for us. You know, it's actually, especially grass-fed dairy, can be really relatively high in omega-3s. It actually has one of the omega-6s, conjugated linoleic acid, which is like this miracle anti-cancer fat in there as well. So it's an omega-6 fat, but it's one of the, you know, one of the good ones as opposed to some of the stuff that comes from seed oils. It's got a thing called lactoferrin. Lactoferrin has been shown to be helpful with people with dementia and arthritis, and it's anti-inflammatory. It's got like it's like this miracle chemical that exists in milk that we're trying to, you know, we're genetically modifying yeast to produce lactoferrin in a lab so we can add it back to foods. But milk has it in naturally. You know, the further we look into milk, the more it has stuff that's doing us good. And when we talk about proteins, you know, the proteins in milk are really complex, and a lot of them are bioactive. They have really, really good effects on our immune system. So some of that is lost through the processing and through the heating and, you know, the pasteurization and particularly homogenization of milk. You know, both of those can affect some of that. But what we find is even milk that's been, you know, from a big dairy that's been homogenized, that's been pasteurized, still has all these amazing bioactive compounds that are doing our body good in ways that it's pretty hard for us to comprehend. You know, a lot of this research has only come out in the last 10, 20 years. You know, it lines the top of the you know, as you, if you have a glass of milk, it lines the top of your airways, and it's really good for stopping respiratory disease. We know that certain milk things are really good for components are good for helping to prevent asthma and all sorts of stuff to do with our lungs. And then that goes right through to its effect on our DNA. We know there's microRNA in milk and it's in cow's milk. Cow's milk is 90% identical to human breast milk. So it's very similar in lots of ways. And it has an effect on the way our genes express themselves. We don't really understand what that is yet, but we know that that happens. We also know that we have done this 10,000 year experiment where we consumed cow's milk, and humanity has got taller, healthier, you know, generally better in most respects up until the last 100 years or so, where we've added a lot of processed food to our diet. So milk is, you know, generally doing us a lot of good, and only people who have, you know, allergies to some of the proteins or you know, intolerances might have to, you know, be careful, I guess, in the way they consume them and how they consume them a little bit. Yeah.
And what are your thoughts on A2 milk? I've got a lot of questions about A2 milk.
Yeah, that's a super interesting one. So A2, so there's proteins in cow's milk. There's like lots of them, you know, like up to 4,654, I think, at the latest count. So a lot of different proteins. But there's a group of proteins called casein, and there's one particular casein that comes in two variants, A1 A2. So all you need to know is major cow protein, A1, A2 variants. Someone years ago, I think, did some research. I can't remember. I think it was a New Zealander, said that, you know, people who have A2 milk, which comes from certain types of cows, produce more A2 milk than A1 milk. People are less likely to get diabetes. Now, that was debunked. But what they did is they started looking at this different protein and how it's digested. And for a long time, they couldn't quite work out. People would say, oh, I feel better if I have A2 milk. Now, A2 is typically from older breeds like Jersey or Guernsey. But you can breed those black and white cows, the Friesian Holsteins. You can actually test each animal and breed for the A2 variant so that they pretty much just produce A2 milk. And we now know, it's only the last couple of years, we now know that there is an inflammatory response to A1 protein in some people. So if you find you're having a little trouble digesting milk and you switch to A2 and you lose that symptoms, that's probably now backed up by science. But for a long time, that was one of those things that was considered a bit woo-woo and a bit, oh, well, whatever. And obviously it's a brand, A2 is a brand. They've been trying to market it as a better digestible, more digestible milk for the last few years, but the research seems to be backing that up now.
Mm. Can you talk a little bit about, because, you know, sometimes I'll get comments on Instagram and I've actually talked to other dairy farmers like in Australia, and it's interesting, people are like, oh, you know, milk has pus in it, it has antibiotics, it has hormones. Can you talk a little bit more about the like farming practices in Australia or in the regulations? Because I think that's such a like a misconception.
Yeah, so milk has lots of cells in it, I guess, which is where that idea of it's pus, you know, PETA, people for the ethical treatment of animals are sort of saying, oh, you know, milk's got millions of pus cells in it. It doesn't. It has cells in it that, you know, like anything from a living, anything that's living has cells in it. And a lot of those are designed to boost the health of the calf and can be beneficial to boost the health of the human. So they're not pus, they're just things that are there to provide immunity or to aid the immunity. So I guess farming systems have a big impact on milk, but I'm just going to frame this and say that all milk is generally, even from big industrial systems, is generally a reasonably it's a super nutrient dense product that is probably doing you good. But we do know that if you treat the soil well, if you treat your landscape well, you have animals grazing on green pastures, so they're not just stuck in a shed eating grain. If you look after the animal well, so you're looking after everything from the soil, the plants, the animal, and then you pump the milk very carefully and look after the milk, you know, get it to people very quickly. And maybe, you know, do less to it. So don't homogenize it. Homogenization is where you take the cream and disperse it so the cream doesn't rise to the top. Every process that you do in that makes that can make the milk of less benefit and maybe slightly less digestible. So if you look after the soil, the plants, the animals, you look after the pumping and the processing, you can end up with a more digestible milk that is going to be more beneficial to the people who get it. But most people, most of the time, can consume stuff from a more industrial system and maybe get a little bit less benefit, but there's still
lots of benefits.
Yeah, still.
Yeah. Because I always say to women, you know, like, look, buy the best quality dairy you can afford. You know, like, we live in Dubai, right? So there's obviously no bloody cows here, and they import all of these milks, and a lot of the ones that they import here have added like vitamin. It's really annoying, actually. Our clients in the States, you know, it's very difficult for them to get reduced fat dairy because they add all synthetic vitamins to it, and they do it over here. So there's a couple that they get from the UK, which are just 100% milk, which is awesome. But, you know, like, not everyone can afford to buy. I mean, in Australia, you can buy raw milk from, it's not like technically allowed to be sold. But I always say to him, look, just get the best that your budget can afford. You know, you're going to still get health benefits from it. Like, is there any specific brands in Australia that you, or farmers, like bigger, or, you know, that you'd recommend that you think is good?
Well, yes, Australia's such a big place and dairy is often localized. So I'm pretty lucky. In Tassie, we have about five, I think, individual small dairy companies, and so I can buy Elgar, which is a brand in glass bottles, a single herd, Jersey Cross, organically run. There's Ashgrove, which is a single family. You can take your own bottles into the shop to fill at these taps. There's Two Cow, there's Brim Creek Dairy, there's Real Milk, which comes from Pine Gunner. So there's and you'll find that in every little corner of Australia. So I guess that's where I look at, you know, where if I'm going to buy something, you know, that's what I'm trying to buy something local, ideally from, you know, one herd or one family, ideally with cream on the top. But again, yeah, it's obviously a lot about access, it's about finances, it's about opportunity. But I think, you know, even this is the really interesting thing, because I didn't used to be as pro dairy. You know, when I went away the other day, interstate, and the first thing I did when I arrived was I bought a tub of yogurt, because I was like, well, I know enough to know that this is going to be good for lots of things. It's going to be, you know, it was a live yogurt, so it has, you know, biology in it that's going to be looking after my gut. It's going to have things that are going to help, you know, prevent me getting a lung infection. It's got all this other stuff, and it'll satisfy me. I won't be hungry because, you know, I'm getting a protein rather than just a, you know, anything with just sugar or just fat, whatever. But I think what people sometimes forget is that milk, even UHT milk, you know, that terrible stuff in the Tetra Pak, you know, that the Tetra Paks are pretty bad. It's six, seven layers of virgin materials, unrecycled and unrecyclable, right? But that milk, even the UHT, the stuff that's inside is still what we would consider just processed, which is stuff that can happen in a home kitchen. So it just gets heated. If you buy a Tetra Pak, and it's always Tetra Paks with the plant milks, what's inside there? And you only have to look at the ingredient label. You know, it's not the almond milk or the oat milk you can make at home. Your listeners can have maybe tried making, you know, some of the, you know,
nut milk. I used to make bloody nut milk. I used to blend that shit up and put it through the cloth.
And at least you're getting, you know, you're getting the nutrition. You also see the waste product as well. And you go, oh, what am I going to do with all those, you know, sort of washed out almonds? I'm going to have to make some biscuits with that, you know. And what we find is, you know, environmentally, you know, for every litre of oat milk, there's 200 grams of waste oats that have to go somewhere. But also the oat milk that you buy has, you know, 5, 7, 10 ingredients added to it. And what we know is that would be classified as ultra-processed food. So all of those plant milks in a Tetra Pak are ultra-processed. Mm-hmm. And the basic way to think of that is ultra-processed, our bodies don't recognize it as food. They don't think of, you know, you can add the calciums in, you can add some fat in, you can, you know, whatever in a factory. Ultra-processed food, our bodies don't really recognize it as nutrition. Whereas milk, even if it's been through, you know, from an industrial dairy and gets put in a UHT container, is still recognized by our bodies as food because it's what we would consider a processed product. It's in a form that our bodies are evolutionarily designed.
So I hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. I wanted to quickly jump in and talk about our brand new Rebuild Your Metabolism Method 28-Day Challenge. Are you a woman over 40 who's feeling stuck when it comes to your health and your body? Maybe you've tried all the diets, you've cut carbs, you've done endless hours of cardio, and you still feel frustrated with no lasting results. You are not alone. This is so common for women in their 40s and beyond. But the good news is there is a better way. This is where the Rebuild Your Metabolism Method 28-Day Challenge comes in. Say goodbye to endless hours of cardio, restrictive diets, cutting sugar, carbs, and quick fixes. And say hello to feeling strong, lean, and energized like never before. Get ready for a healthier metabolism, better sleep, balanced hormones, more energy, and sustainable fat loss. Transform your body, health, and life after 40. So this isn't just a quick fix diet or a one-size-fits-all workout plan. It's a method that combines metabolic support and body recomposition, specifically designed to help women build muscle, lose body fat, and restore hormonal and metabolic health after 40. So here's what you're going to get in the 28 days of the challenge. Custom macros and meal planning. So no more restrictive dieting or food fear. You'll learn how to set macros, adjust macros, build meal plans, and eat foods you love while fueling your body to burn fat and build muscle. We've got hundreds of structured training programs. So these are designed for busy women with simple, effective workouts that you can do at home or in the gym. Each workout is actually customizable to the equipment you have access to, and each exercise comes with a detailed video tutorial. You get daily coaching and support. So you get access to me and Craig for 28 days to help guide you every step of the way, accountability, support, encouragement, and expert advice. You get to use our incredible new strength tracker app to track your progress, complete weekly check-ins, track your food, build meal plans, and use our unique training system to ensure your technique is spot on and you're progressing week to week. You also get access to us for 28 days, so you can jump on live calls and get feedback and coaching on your check-ins, as well as access to us via our community platform to ask questions and get support. And you get lifetime access to the course materials with modules on nutrition, metabolism, and hormonal health, plus guides on setting macros, creating balanced meal plans, recipe books, meal ideas, and we're just going to teach you everything you need to know about nutrition. And here's the best part. It's just a one-time payment of $29 Australian. Plus, it comes with a money-back guarantee. So if by the end of the challenge, you're not convinced you can build muscle, lose body fat, and improve your health and hormonal issues using my method, I'll refund your money, no questions asked. This challenge isn't just about 28 days. It's about creating a sustainable lifestyle where you feel empowered to take control of your health, eat delicious food, and finally break free from restrictive diets and endless hours of training. So if you're ready to finally take control back of your body and your health, click on the link below in the show notes and join today. Let's get back to the podcast.
Designed to recognize. And so I think that's where people make the mistake, is they think that because they're buying something that has the halo of oats or almonds, or, you know, it's been wafted near some hemp or something, you know, that it's got the nutrition of the original product. And I just had a handful of almonds before I came in here. You know, I eat oats most mornings, but oat milk is not oats, and almond milk is not almonds. And so, but milk is milk. Yeah. Milk is,
I think it's just, they're just such poor substitutes nutritionally for milk. Like, they just don't stack up. Like yeah, you said, like when you're looking at, exactly. I really like it that you touched on seed oils. So I noticed that too with a lot of these milks, that they'll have like canola oil or sunflower oil. Talk a little bit more about why those oils aren't great.
Yeah, so generally we know that the human diet had a fairly there's lots of fats, but you know, in terms of the ones we're going to talk about, if you think of omega-6 and omega-3 fats are sort of the ones that we will talk about at the moment. And so there was a ratio of omega-6 to omega-3, and so of about 2-to-1, 1-to-1 in the historic human diet. So they're just different types of fat, and generally omega-6, if the ratio is right, you need both. So it's not like you shouldn't have either. You need to have both in your diet. But omega-6 tend to be more inflammatory. So if you have too many omega-6 versus omega-3, it's more inflammatory, which is bad for every, you know, cell in your body pretty much. So whether it's autoimmune disease or you know, gut inflammation or brain health, whatever, they're all intertwined. And so and what we've discovered is that, like, a lot of the things that we get fat from these days, like seeds, have a massive omega-6 to omega-3 components. So our diets have gone up. Some, you know, in places like Australia, we're something like 15-to-1, 20-to-1 ratio. So we're having about 15 to 20 times more omega-6s than we should have in our diet, and they're replacing omega-3. So the balance of these good and, you know, these fats, which is supposed to be at 2-to-1, 1-to-1, is now white blown out. And so the seed oils are typically the problem. So you don't get the problem with, you know, animal fats like tallow and lard and full fat dairy. They're really well balanced. Especially grass fed dairy is really beautifully balanced, actually. And so they're what we would consider optimal for human health. So I think that's when, you know, whenever you see, you know, they've added a seed oil back in, and they, you know, maybe for their barista milks they've added an emulsifier. You know, you're sort of layering dodgy upon dodgy, you know. We know emulsifiers are pretty terrible for gut health. So anytime you see those, you know, really, really big red flag. A lot of the ones you just pour in your tea at home, you may not have the emulsifiers, but they're still ultra processed. They're still got the, you know, usually seed oils. They're usually terrifically low in protein. They're usually not very complex proteins. Often they have sugars in, so. And sometimes the sugars may be natural, like oat milk. Oat milk has maltose. Maltose is you know, it's one of those sugars that's terrible for your glycemic index. But it's really great for your dentist because you know it ferments in your mouth. So you typically Yeah, you're going to lose your teeth much quicker having something like oat milk than you are traditional dairy, where the sugars aren't fermentable in your mouth and it has these other components, the fats and the proteins that actually protect your teeth, as well as getting the calcium within the milk itself. So you know, it's almost like trying to compare these things that pretend to be milk with milk is, you know, it's kind of really hard. I thought I was going to write way more on plant milk in the book, to be honest. I thought, wow, I'm going to just, you know, I really want to delve into this. And it's like, well, it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, there's a potato milk. It's kind of like potato without any of the goodness, you know. So what am I supposed to talk about?
It tastes terrible too. Like, oh, I remember I used to make the almond milk and it's just like watery shit. Like, how good is a coffee with real milk? You know, real ice cream, gelato, cheese. Oh my God, I just love cheese. You know, life is just better with dairy in it, just from an enjoyment perspective.
Yeah, and I think that when that was my starting point, because I'm a chef by trade, it's about pleasure. And so, you know, if you're not enjoying it, then what's the point? I did a tasting actually of some plant milk with my son, and again, we were interested because we, you know, we milk a cow. You know, it's like we're, you know, kind of quite lucky in that respect. And he was so angry at me. Well, why did you make me taste those, Dad? You know, like, he's like, these are just awful. And he'd never tried them in his life. Like, he doesn't have my biases. You know, like, I've got all my own hang-ups and biases, and I'm sure, you know, if your listeners are honest with themselves, they'll say they've got their own, biases and whatever. And so I went to these milks going, I wonder what they're going to be like. And I was really, to be honest, I was actually really disappointed. And then a lot of people, I put it on social media actually, a lot of people said, oh, but you didn't have it in coffee. You didn't have it where it's supposed to be. I'm like, I'm a chef by trade, right? If I want to know what saffron tastes like, I don't put saffron in a dish and then go, what does the dish taste like? I put saffron in my mouth and taste it because, you know, like a casserole or a coffee is not a hospital. Things don't get better by being put in there, right? You know, if your milk is not very good tasting, the coffee is just going to dilute the badness, right? It's not going to, if it's not already good tasting, then it's not going to make the end product better. It's only going to be watered down once it goes in there. And I was really interested that people were like, oh, no, you should have it in this way. So, well, if they don't taste good raw, like, how are they possibly going to taste good once I add them to something else?
Mm, I totally agree. Yeah, it's terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. I'm so happy that I'm drinking and eating dairy again. And there was something else I wanted to ask. Yeah, okay. So if someone is – the other thing that I find with clients too is, you know, obviously if you stop eating dairy, your body stops making the enzyme that breaks it down. And I think what a lot of people and women don't realize is that you make the enzyme to break down lactose in your intestinal lining of the wall of your intestinal lining. So if that's irritated and inflamed, it's going to affect that. And if you stop eating dairy, your body will stop producing that enzyme. So what I find with women too is if we work on healing their intestines, you know, improving their overall health, and then we gradually reintroduce dairy. Like, I feel like gradual is good, you know, and starting with, say, like the hard cheeses, some yogurt, maybe you know, you could try goat's milk. And then just gradually introduce it and allow your body to start making that enzyme again. Do you have any other tips for reintroducing dairy into your diet?
No, I think, I mean, that's the thing, is to probably do it gently. You know, you talk to people and they go, oh, well, I tried, you know, having a big glass of milk and it wasn't great. And so, well, yeah, because your body's not really used to it. You know, we have all these things that live in and on us that are very used to this environment. And you know, they're feeding off all these the little micro components, the biochemicals in the food we eat, and they get a bit shocked when you suddenly drastically change your diet like that. So they're not going to love it. I guess the other thing is that is to have those sort of partially digested forms. So, you know, if you're if you want to try, you know, a little bit, you know, have yogurt or a milk kefir or something, something like that as an entry point rather than going straight to fresh milk, because the fresh milk is a little bit harder to digest. And people can have all different, there's lactose intolerance, but there's also, you can have intolerances or reactions to some of the proteins, and there's so many different proteins. So, you know, we know that camel's milk lacks one of the proteins that's in cow's milk. So some people find that cow's milk, you know, just makes it a bit irritated, even if they have something like cheese, which is already, you know, no lactose in it. And it, because there's a protein, and they go, oh, camel milk doesn't have that in it. Or, you know, goats has less of that, so I can, you know, I consume goats. We tend to find the other, and you obviously across this, but, you know, sheep milk is quite digestible. Goat milk is next, and then cows probably is, you know, a bit less digestible again. So, you know, you may be, if you're lucky enough to have access to sheep dairy, that can be, for some people, can be this beautiful entry point, and then and maybe they step up to cow's milk eventually, or maybe they just stick with something like that. And I have to say, if you give me sheep milk cheese and sheep milk yogurt, I would be, happy forever.
I agree. I agree. I love, like, there's a brand in Australia. It's a goat's milk feta. God. Meredith's Dairy, maybe? Is it Meredith?
Oh, Meredith make a cracking one, yeah.
They do a few ones, and I'm like, oh, it's just the best in a nice Greek salad. And I love the yogurt too. It's just got that sort of, like, it's like a bit of a, I don't know how to describe the taste. Like, it's slightly, like, it's,
it's almost, some of them, well, those ones, theirs can, has this almost lemony character.
You know,
it's got this sprightly acidity and this sort of lifted herbaceous. It's almost like they've put a few.
It's twang.
It's
like, it's the best. I love food too, like, just obsessed with food and dairy. And actually, you know, I know this is a separate topic, but I was just, you sort of mentioned talking about meat. And I think that's another big topic, you know, like, so many women, like, we get lots of ex-vegetarians coming in with heaps of health issues. And, you know, I think people, like, when farming's done right, like proper farming, regenerative farming, you know, like, people have this idea, one, that meat's not healthy, but two, that, you know, the farming is just destroying the earth. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, I don't know if that'll, probably a totally different topic, but.
Well, it's a big topic, So I think with a lot of that stuff, it boils down to, you know, no farming. It's not the cow. There's a cliche. It's not the cow. It's the how. So if anyone's travelled and seen broadacre cropping that's done using, you know, just spraying hundreds of acres with Roundup and then sowing a monoculture and then spraying out every insect, you know, there's no trees, there's no biodiversity. That farming system is not what I would consider ideal, and that's producing plant foods, you know. And it's the same with animals. You can have intensive animal production that I would consider, you know, not suitable for me, not the sort of stuff I would want to consume personally, and I don't think is good for the planet. But it's not the animal, it's the farmer and the farm that's the difference, you know, because, you know, animals, you know, the planet, soil, you know, I'm a big fan of soil. Soil needs animals, and you can either use domesticated animals, or you can, you know, try and encourage wild animals, or, you know, whatever. But soil needs animals. It's just that's how it's evolved. And so once we take animals away from landscapes, then how do we replace them? So, you know, it's you can use animals to heal a landscape as well as to damage a landscape, and that's not the animal's fault. It's the farm that makes the difference, or the farmer that makes the difference.
Yeah, and talk a little bit about, like, why meat is great, like animal protein.
Yeah, so I guess it's a bit like dairy, that, you know, what we've got is these incredibly complex food sources that we have evolved to consume. And they're very hard to replace. Like, it's very hard to, you know, they keep trying to replace these things in labs. You know, they can't do it gastronomically, and they certainly can't do it nutritionally. So, you know, meat has, you know, lots of different components in it that are really, it's not, you know, they go, oh, we can just replace the protein, we just get the muscle fiber. But there's way more stuff going on in there than that. It's probably, the last I heard, something like 1,400 different compounds in red meat, and they're what our bodies are designed for, you know, and a lot of those things are doing stuff that we don't even know what they're doing yet, but we know they're having some impact on our metabolism. And so getting rid of that, fine, but what are you going to replace it with? And so I think that's where, and a lot of people will go to, you know, they'll go to a vegetarian or a vegan diet, and I feel really great because their diet wasn't great beforehand and they're suddenly consuming lots of vegetables or whatever. But what we know is things like, you know, really obvious things like iron and calcium, you know, the vitamin B12, you know, you can survive without those or with low levels of those for a while, but the repercussions are long term. And that's why something like 66-70% of, you know, I'm an ex-vegetarian, you're an ex-vegetarian, you know.
I'm actually not. That is the one I've done.
Oh, you weren't?
Oh, okay, yeah. That's the only one that I didn't do. I just had to keep eating meat, but I did everything else. But yeah, sorry, yeah. Go on.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, okay. So, but I'm sure lots of people listening to this are, you know, have been vegetarian or vegan, and so you're actually, you know, I meet people all the time who are ex-vegan, ex-vegetarian, because what happens is, I guess, you go through a point where you go, oh, this is good for the planet or this is good for my body, and then later on you go, you know what, my body is telling me I need
it's neither.
You know? Probably neither. Yeah. And so my classic is my friend who was vegetarian for years, and she was, you know, she had twins, she's breastfeeding two babies, and her husband's a hunter. He's out, you know, shooting deer, and he's hooking into some venison chops or something. And she's watching him. She's been vegetarian for like 15 years. She's having vitamin injections to try and iron injections to keep up with, you know. And then she just reaches across the table and grabs this, you know, haunch of and venison and just hooks in. And now is, you know, she's very ethical with how she chooses her meat. You know, it has to come from a system that she's happy with. But she's like, my body told me I had to have this stuff and I listened to my body. And I think that's, we have nutritional wisdom. There's a lot of things that try to trick us, you know, like, you know, like donuts, you know, into, you know, wow, that's delicious. That must be good for me. But if there is a nutritional wisdom that I think we can all tap into, which is kind of like, you kind of know what's good and bad, you know, in terms of donuts and Tim Tams and whatever, you know. But 90% of the time, if you can go, well, let's have something that's not, that, you know, that your grandma would recognize, that's come from a system that you're happy with, that looks and acts like food, you know, then you know that's going to be doing your body good. And getting hung up on, you know, whether you're eating meat or dairy, it can be counterproductive in the long term. You know, and I think it's great that people have moral viewpoints and stands, you know, and have reasons for stuff, but oftentimes they, you know, you don't want to, you've got to be careful with your own body as well, and not, and recognize that we are kind of designed to have stuff that comes from
animals. We are.
And if we don't have that, you're going to have to, it's like really hard to replace. You have to pay a lot of attention, and you can do it, you know?
Yeah, it's difficult. It is much more difficult. And you've got supplementation. I think, you know, like, again, we, you know, like just from a nutrient perspective, like you can't get the usable form of vitamin A without eating animal products. You just can't. And, you know, like for women, we use vitamin A in our protective steroid hormone production. It's essential, you know, so you can't get that. It's hard to get zinc. You know, you can't get gelatin. Gelatin is only found in animal products, you know. So, yeah, it's difficult. Some of the B vitamins, you know, I agree. Calcium is harder to get to, you know. And I've just had so many women come into our program with like terrible health issues. And then once they've included animal products in their diet again, they've just seen such great improvements. And like you say, you've got to choose from dairy farmers and local farms that treat the animals well, that have good farming practices, you know. And I think, you know, one of the things we encourage too in our program is like stew the whole joint. Like we, you know, so you're getting the gelatin, like you don't have to waste things. Like you can even, you know, like buy half cows or whole cows and freeze it, and you can use all of the parts of the cow. Like one of my favorites is beef cheeks. I love oyster blade, those really gelatinous cuts of meat, lamb shanks, oxtail. You know, I make a lot of broth out of chicken feet. I know that's not beef, but you know, like I think you can, in the stewing cuts, you can stew them up. You can make such delicious things. So yeah, you could do it in better ways, I think. You're right, like more sustainable ways where you're supporting local farmers. But, yeah, I don't know. Like I just don't think it's healthy. It's interesting. There's this lady. She's a very good marketer. She's built a vegan bodybuilding company, the Sculpted Vegan. And she was posting on Instagram how she's gone through early menopause at 40. I'm like, well, maybe that's potentially to do with your nutrition. Like it's just so interesting. I'm like, you're 40. You shouldn't be going through menopause, you know. Yeah. So it's just like, it's just not healthy. I don't think that it's a healthy way for women or men, to eat?
Yeah, look, I think it's, and it's possible, but I think most people most of the time would struggle to have the time to be able to do it properly. And then we know all of the things that, you know, the fake bacons and all that kind of stuff are
horrendous. Horrendous. Look at the ingredients in them.
Yeah, yeah. So they're bad on every level. And look, I've got you know, a couple of friends who are vegan, and some of them, one of them is a chef, she eats really well, but the others eat terribly. Like they aren't actually getting a lot of joy from their food, and that's fine. I guess they don't, maybe don't care. But for me, it's like, oh, how could you sacrifice pleasure? You know, and I understand the animal welfare.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you know, but they're willing to do that. But I do think there's a lot of compromises, a lot of, you know, stuff going on, and a lot of self-denial going on. And you know, there are health repercussions that they also are dealing with, which may or may not be fixed by animal products. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it does. It seems that, you know, I would be looking at all the options, I guess, and saying, well, I've got an ethical point of view, but how can I marry that with my biological needs?
Yeah, so agree. Well, that was amazing. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast. Do you want to just quickly finish off with the books, your books, and where people can buy them?
Yeah, so like Milk came out mid-2024, so that still should be everywhere. So it's just called Milk, and it's about, you know, it's just trying to get people excited about this product. Like, there's a lot of talk about I do lots of things like wolf milk and seal milk and pigeon milk to give us a concept of what milk is, but I concentrate on the two that matter to humanity the most, which are our cow's milk and human breast milk. And the human breast milk one is like, there's so many amazing things in that. It's like wonderful, wonderful. And any nursing mothers or people who've ever nursed, that's really a lovely thing. People come up to me and say, oh my God, you've validated this time that I thought was penance, you know, with my child. You know, you've made me realize that it was worth going through some of this stuff because of what's actually in breast milk. I did one on soil a few years ago, which is trying to demystify, you know, it's for soil, for people who didn't think they cared. And, you know, it's not for, you know, not really technical, but it's full of amazing stuff about this thing that supports us all. And then I have one on the ethics of eating meat called On Eating Meat, which is just about, you know, some people said they became vegetarian after eating it, and other people said, I stopped being vegetarian after eating it. You know, I'm not trying to be the arbiter of people's choices. I just want to give them information that they don't just get from the internet, that based on science and a real life experience of actually growing food.
Yeah, awesome. And like you say, like eating meat and animal products and dairy, it's just joy.
Yeah, I find it very hard to get the same pleasure from
eating salad. Not that I'm saying you can't eat salads, but a salad alongside a nice steak and some cheese and, you know. Okay, cool. All right. Well, thank you so much. And I'm going to pop all the links below so you can find Matthew. And then, as always, everyone, take a screenshot of the episode and share it on Instagram stories and tag me at Kitty, KittyBlomfield. And each month I pick a winner and they get a tub of Saturay premium collagen valued at $79. And thanks again, Matthew, and I'll be back again next week.
Thanks so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, or leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. That helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. You can also keep up with your host and find her content on Instagram at KittyBlomfield. Once again, thanks for tuning in to the Weight Loss for Women podcast, and we hope you'll join us again on the next episode. Until then.